Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, good evening, ladies. Welcome. Before we get started, I'm often remiss in asking for questions. And I promised at the beginning I would do that. So are there any questions, Muxa related or other Shabbos related questions? Mm-hmm. Great question. Not a simple question to answer. It would depend on what the result is. Meaning, cutting fruits and vegetables is certainly fine. Chopping them is not. Chopping is one of the melachos of tochin, which we'll get to soon. So, if it's designed to chop, then it would be muksa. Or certainly the implement, the blade, whatever that's designed to chop would be muksa. If it's simply an issue of, you know, do you go down twice or 15 times? And you often use it just to cut, that's fine. But if it's designed to chop and you use it to chop,
there's
or whatever.
And then there's one that just makes it like this or something.
Ah. So, yes. So mixing also would depend. If you typically use it, let's put it that way. If you typically use it for, you know, kneading or, you know, the result, we're getting to the malach of lush, which is we'll get to again later. If the result is something akin to a dough, then it would in fact be muksa.
Okay.
If it's simply mixing, let's say, salad dressing, and the result is liquid and it flows easily, then it would not be muksa.
Okay.
So in both of those applications, I assume there's only two basic applications, blade and then mixer, it would depend. Certainly it's not electric, so that's a non-issue, but it would just depend on what the normal result of what you do is.
Okay,
great question. Great question. That's a spin-off. We touched last week on a pepper grinder. Pepper grinders are would be muksa. You're not allowed to use them on Shabbos. Yes, ma'am. Like a Brita.
Yeah.
Yes. So that is a famous question, and it boils down to the malacha you're touching on. There's a third malacha already in 3.5 minutes. That's great. Is borer is sorting and selecting. And the answer there is, if it makes the water potable, makes the water drinkable, then you're not allowed to use it. If in Atlanta, I would argue the water is certainly drinkable, you know, it's pretty relatively good water, and you just like it, you know, even better, you like it, you know, filtered again, run through the charcoal, whatever, that actually is fine. Meaning if you're not, the halacha basically puts it on you. Again, if you yourself feel that it gets just nicer, better, but you wouldn't drink tap water, so you're not really technically doing the act of sorting and selecting. If you're making it potable, then you are, and you're not allowed to do it. And then the halakha of muksa would follow that. So that in some places, one suspects, you know, you don't drink the water, and straining it, filtering it would be required, so to speak, and then makes it, yes, muksa. Would not be allowed to use it, and not be allowed to move it. Around here, I suspect most people would agree, it's... not muksa. Okay, so tonight, ladies, as discussed and as promised, I want to touch for one class at least on the importance and centrality of Shabbos. That's the title that I gave the class. It doesn't do justice because it gets into a variety of different things. But here, the focus is going to be on
what is the title?
The title is the importance and centrality of Shabbos. Importance and centrality, but again, that is with a disclaimer that that's not a very good title for everything that we're going to discuss. It certainly speaks to the beginning, the first point or two or three, but then, you know, we'll see how that veers off somewhat. What I mean here is my Rosh Yeshiva Zatzar of Weinberg used to make this point on a regular basis, and if you heard Rabbi Teller, he made a similar point Saturday night, and that is that we really should not be viewing mitzvos the same way as we view paying our taxes. Paying our taxes is something that we do. We realize as citizens of a country, of a state, of a county, that we have responsibility to pitch in, to pay, to whatever. But and hopefully we do that honestly and appropriately in the way the halacha requires us to do. But at the same time, I suspect most of us don't think of paying taxes as, yeah, like, all right, I just wrote that check to the IRS. Like, it's not something you look forward to. It's not something we all, most of us at least generally, will pay a little extra to a CPA to try and pay less tax, tax sheltering. As long as it's legal, it's certainly halakhically acceptable and it's done, you know, it's done by everybody. That is the norm with tax paying. And there's nothing wrong with that type of an attitude, again, as long as we're following the rules basically in the halacha. Whereas when we talk about mitzvos, we really shouldn't be viewing them that way. We should not be, as someone said, checking off our list of obligations, that I fulfill this one, that I fulfill that one. It's certainly better to do mitzvos with that view, with that perspective, than not do them at all, obviously. But we should view mitzvos, the ones we enjoy and the ones we may not happen to enjoy, as something that we're doing because our Creator told us this is the best thing for us. It's truly, sincerely for our benefit, whether we get it or not, whether we're in the mood or not. But we understand, at least intellectually, this is for my benefit. This is really what the best thing for me, for my family, for the world. And we should do it, therefore, willingly, and hopefully as often as we can, b'simcha, with a certain happiness, with a certain excitement. And that's, of course, easier, you know, certainly easy to eat the Friday night's meal with simcha. It's a little harder to do some other things, fast and Yom Kippur, b'simcha. But that certainly is our goal. So, in saying that, we need to understand and appreciate that the vast majority of Shabbos, the laws of Shabbos that we're going to be learning, God willing, for quite some time, is what not to do. It's the stuff we're supposed to avoid. The bulk of Shabbos is the 39 melachos we're about to start. So that provides the framework within which Shabbos is supposed to exist, the outline, so to speak, of Shabbos, and certainly the most critical parts. The only biblical, those 39 are biblical, and the only other biblical mitzvah per se, positive, is Kiddush. Is making Kiddush, is declaring that the meal, that the day and the meal that follows, Friday night especially, is different. It's not a regular meal you have any other night of the week. It's special. The day is special. That's really the biblical mitzvah on Shabbos. Zohar and Shomer are our partners. One's positive, one's negative. But what's fascinating, I think, is that that's really the letter of the law. The letter of the law is avoiding transgressions, avoiding creative activities that we're not allowed to do, and the one positive of making Kiddush and declaring the day is special. But the spirit, the feeling, the emotional, psychological, spiritual, if you will, component really is not delineated as clearly or as specifically by the Torah. It's simply not. It's left up really for, we'll talk in a moment about Yeshayahu, Isaiah the prophet, discusses the spirit of what Shabbos is supposed to be about. That's really the foundation of the whole thing. And then the rabbis come along and add different elements to that, explain, extrapolate. But it is fascinating, I think, that all of that is left up to us, again, to the prophet, which is certainly not a biblical mitzvah. When the prophet is a discussion for another time, but when Moshe Rabbeinu finished the Torah, so to speak, and the 613 mitzvahs were given, that's it. That's mitzvahs. Everything that comes after, from Yehoshua, all the prophets, on down through the rabbis through today, is not a biblical mitzvah. It's not a responsibility in the same level as the 613 mitzvahs that we talk about. So it's fascinating that the spirit of Shabbos is really not focused on in a significant way by the Torah, by the Chumash itself, by Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah. It's really left up to the next step, which is the prophets, and the next step, the rabbis. And yet, that ultimately is the goal. The real, true goal of Shabbos, of course, is not just to sleep. You know, if you sleep 25 hours, you miss. You know, you can't do melacha if you're sleeping. That would be missing Shabbos. That would be missing the whole purpose of Shabbos. The whole purpose of Shabbos is the spirit, is the enjoyment, is the connecting with Hashem, connecting with family, connecting with peers and friends, etc. That really is the ultimate goal of the Shabbos. There's kind of a baseline, you know, don't do anything you're not supposed to do, and the cooking and everything else. And then the next level up is the spirit. It's not just the body, but it's the spirit of Shabbos. So it's that's our goal, and it shouldn't be just, again, viewed as I'm avoiding the malachas and we'll get through the day. You know, that's paying taxes. That's not the ultimate of Shabbos. That was certainly the view I had as a young teenager, and I was not yet Shomer Shabbos, not yet Sabbath observant, I had a friend that was. So I knew I couldn't call him, I couldn't hang out, etc. So I viewed it simply as the big, you know, the big bad day of Noah, and you couldn't do anything. And how boring is that? And it took a little maturity for me to realize that's not at all what Shabbos is about. And I think that's the big paradigm shift that many Jews, many of us maybe, have gone through in our own lives. So that Shabbos becomes the most, we look forward to it more than any other day of the week. That's really the goal of Shabbos. So that's really the topic I want to focus on today. So the next point, ladies, when we talk about the importance and centrality, is the fact that Shabbos focuses us on the fact that Hashem is two things in a certain sense. Hashem is the creator of everything. And by that, Shabbos is a testimony to that, because we remember the whole creation. The 6 days, He was creative, and we're told all these thousands of years to do what He did, to be creative those 6 days. 6 days of the creation are mimicked by our Sunday through Friday, and we're told to be creative, not just to sit around and be a couch potato, but to be creative, to create businesses, to create technologies, to create cures, to build and to create the different things that the world creates. That's actually part of what we're supposed to be doing here. But when we stop, when we unplug, when we shut off the cell phone Friday afternoon, we're remembering Hashem did the same thing. He, so to speak, stopped creating on the seventh day. Something we all know from when we're very little. So every time we keep Shabbos, we are reaffirming that understanding that Hashem is the creator of the world. He started the whole thing off. He created us. He created the world. He created everything. He created everything. That's the first aspect of Hashem as creator, which Shabbos affirms. The second is Hashem as manager. That Hashem is the manager of the world. He is in control. He ultimately directs everything. This, of course, gets into the famous and deep conversation about our free will and Hashem's control, a conversation that we should have a different time. But it speaks to the fact that Hashem is the manager. And part of that, I think, maybe this is more relevant to us in America than anything else, is that you can stop worrying about your business, you can stop worrying about your clients, you can stop worrying about your sales, because you're ultimately not in charge. You're not in charge of your business, you're not in charge of your parnasa, you're not in charge. You're just not in charge. At the end of the day, He is the manager of the world. He's running the show. And you don't have to look too far in the news, etc. Very, very wealthy people, and the next day they're paupers, and poor people, the opposite. There's obviously a connection between our efforts and results, there's no question. But at the end of the day, we're not in charge. We're simply not. And Shabbos, therefore, reminds us of that every week. That when we shut off that phone and clients have to call us back, business issues, whatever, crises have to wait, barring health and life and limb, everything else has to wait till Saturday night, reminds us that He's the boss and not me. And these two reasons are why Shabbos is so central. So central. So that when we talk about businesses, we're talking about especially about restaurants, etc. We talk about a Shomer Shabbos bakery. Shabbos is not just like any other mitzvah. We talk about Shabbos in a different way, because Shabbos is central. Shabbos is critical. Shabbos is, you know, the famous line: "More than the Jews keep the Shabbos keeps the Jews." And that's true. You know, you can talk about Judaism and all you want, but unless a person holds on to the cores of Judaism, and Shabbos is one of them, unfortunately, we see. And we see the results, which I think helps explain why, you know, certain institutions open on Shabbos and people get very upset, and there's movements and speeches and, you know, all that stuff happens around Shabbos, which wouldn't necessarily happen around other mitzvot, because we understand Shabbos is such a core of what Judaism is all about. So it's something for us to think about. Thank God we have Shabbos, we keep Shabbos to the best of our ability, but to think about it is not just this goes on a timer and the toilet paper gets cut. It's the messages, it's the fact that He was the creator, and the fact that He is the manager to this day, that we need to remind ourselves of. Okay, so having said that, there is again a mitzvah from Isaiah, from the prophet, which is somewhere between the biblical and rabbinic, is from the prophets, which is to rest. It is a positive commandment to rest on Shabbos. To rest on Shabbos. And that takes several different, let's break them up into four, a list of four different areas. Four different areas. The mitzvah from Isaiah, the prophet, from Yeshayahu, to rest on Shabbos. The phrase in, the pasuk? Yes. Not that I have it on the top of my head, but it is, if you want to look it up. Good question. No. If I had the sheets and you'd have the pasuk in front of you, I'd go through it more, but I figured without it would be difficult. But Yeshayahu, again, I'll just tell you where it is if you're interested in looking it up later. Certainly, it's in Perek Nunches, that's 58. Pasuk Yud Gimel, which is 13, 58:13 in Isaiah. And he's referring to Shabbos and keeping it holy and declaring Shabbos as an oneg, as something which is pleasurable, and making it holy. And then the last line he says that a person has to, he delineates really three things. I want to break them into four for practical purposes. But he says a person should avoid going the normal way that he goes. This is a very loose translation, but a person should avoid normal going. Hiluchach is the way the Gemara puts it. His walking, his movements. That's really the first of these four bullet points. His walking, his movements. A person, for example, shouldn't run on Shabbos unless you're running to shul, running to a mitzvah. A person should be more laid back. A person should not, you know, the Manhattan walk should be turned down a little bit. To be a little more relaxed. And then number two, he talks about avoiding business dealings and arrangements and anything to do with finances. Number three is not preparing. We'll talk about this a little extensively. Not preparing for after Shabbos. We've touched on this before. And number four, he talks about speech. That your speech on Shabbos should be different than your speech during the rest of the week.
Content?
Focus is mostly content. So those four, let me just say them again. The first one is, number one is how one walks, just how one holds himself, walking, running. Your movements on Shabbos should be more chilled. Number two is avoiding business, anything to do with business, finance, that whole genre of activity. Number four again is preparation. Preparing from Shabbos to after Shabbos is prohibited. And again, we'll talk about that. And then the last one is your speech. How you talk on Shabbos should be different. What you say should be different than the rest of the week. So the first one is pretty straightforward. It just means more chill, more laid back. You shouldn't be in such a rush. Just take it easy. And that adds to the flavor of Shabbos, of resting, of not being so. The exception is shul. You're late to shul. Certainly one's allowed to run, late to do a mitzvah of some sort, someone needs help. But barring all of those, one really should not be, should be more relaxed. The second of business affairs is, again, not talking business, certainly not making any business deals. This would include not reading the financial papers, the business section of the newspaper, that type of thing. Kiddush should not be the time to talk about the stock market and how your portfolio is doing, or your business deal, and you just made a business, made a merger, made a partnership. All that kind of stuff is out. It should not be part of your Shabbos, good or bad. It should not be discussed on. Just won the lottery, anything to do with money and finance and all that kind of stuff should really be out of the conversation from Shabbos. Now, preparation is maybe let's just skip to the fourth, because we will spend some time on preparation. The fourth, again, is about discussions. You know, the message here is that Shabbos should be Shabbos. It's the goal is to focus on the present. We should be present. We should be here. We should be right in, you know, in the moment, not to be worrying about what's next, not to be planning what's next, not to be thinking about my responsibilities Saturday night, Sunday morning, you know, all that other stuff. Monday morning, for sure not. That doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. Your week should be over. It's never over. There's always something pending, something you have to do, another email has to be sent. Right? That's life. But mentally, it's a tremendous training if you think about it. Because, you know, in psychology we talk about reframing, looking at things differently. It's one of the most important skills a person can have, really. It's how, you know, control, being in control of your thoughts. And that's this mitzvah. This mitzvah is to be in control of your thoughts, not to allow your thoughts to flow freely when, you know, whatever comes to mind, that's what you focus on. Which, let's face it, can lead a person in many ways, anxiety and depression, you know, there's a whole bunch of different things that flow from that. Here, the mitzvah is just to focus on Shabbos, just to rest and to relax and to pretend that everything else doesn't exist. Problems of before, they, you know, should be ignored. Okay, so going back to preparation, ladies, a big conversation. I think we've touched on different examples before, but we touched on washing dishes. So we said washing dishes so that you have less to do Saturday night. Washing dishes so they're ready for an event Saturday night is prohibited. That's just specifically clearly preparing for Saturday night, despite the fact that there's nothing wrong, if done correctly, with washing dishes. Soap, cold water, the right kind of brush. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not a malacha. If it was forbidden, it'd be forbidden. It wouldn't be part of this conversation. But one shouldn't do one should not wash dishes if their goal is to prepare or to alleviate work from later on. One certainly is allowed to do the dishes if those dishes are needed or may be needed for the next day. One can certainly clean dishes if they're going to smell, it's something that involves Shabbos. It's going to take away from your experience of Shabbos, or you need them for Shabbos, that's certainly fine. Obviously, intellectual honesty has to be applied here. You know, you need 10 dishes for the next day, and the other ones can be put somewhere, they won't be in your way. You can't just, you know, I'm washing them anyway, let me do all 35. No, that's not true. Do what you need to be done, and the rest of them, hide, you know, whatever you need to do. Again, if there's nowhere to hide them and they're gonna get smelly, that's certainly okay. That's one example. Making the bed, I mentioned, is another example. Making the bed because you like the room to look neat is fine. There's nothing wrong with making the bed for the room to look neat.
For Shabbos.
Making the bed for Shabbos, for now. Making the bed for guests that are coming later to see your house and mass, whatever. No, that's not okay. Cleaning up the house. I mean, every example you can think of follows the same rules. As long as the activity itself is not prohibited, the only question you have to ask yourself then is, am I doing it for now, or am I doing it for later?
And if I make the bed every day, in a certain way,
right.
Can I make it that way?
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Because you're making it because you want the bed. I mean, again, I'm assuming by that you're saying you like, this is the way you like your house to look. That's perfectly fine. That's your enjoyment. Like many of us like you. We want this room to be put together, not because of some extraneous, because I like it put together. There's no ulterior extraneous reason. Another example, ladies, a very common example is putting away leftovers. Putting away leftovers is you're simply keeping the food fresh. You certainly can do that. You're putting the food in the fridge now, not so that you can eat it Monday for lunch. You know, you eat the Shabbos leftovers Monday lunch, but because you want it to stay fresh. Avoiding the loss of food that the schnitzel stays out and gets spoiled is a now need. It's not a later need. Moreover, when those leftovers are being put away, if you decide this is for Wednesday or this is for next Shabbos, you can in fact put them in the freezer. There's nothing wrong. There's no halacha that requires you to put them in the fridge and then Saturday night to move it from the fridge to the freezer. You can certainly move. You can take it from the counter, put it in your plastic, whatever, put it in the bag, and then put it in the freezer. You cannot go through your fridge Shabbos afternoon and say, what do I need? What am I going to use next Shabbos? And start putting it all in the freezer. So there is a distinction made. Again, food that's being wrapped up with wrapped up initially, it's in room temperature right now. It cannot stay in room temperature. you have the option of moving it to the fridge or the freezer, because the halacha looks at this. The operative issue here is retaining its freshness now. That's a Shabbos need. Where it ends up is irrelevant. Fridge, freezer, or other place. Whereas if it's already in a place where the fridge is not going to spoil in 5 hours, it's just not. You can certainly move it to the freezer after Shabbos and use it a month later. That's fine.
Should we have foil or whatever we put around it pre-cut?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. The sheets.
Definitely.
Sheets,
yes, either the Casco sheets or pre-cut them before, or use a bat, you know, use something else. But yes, cutting foil, cutting saran, all that kind of stuff is definitely forbidden on Shabbos. Mechatech, which is cutting to size. You can use the scissors only, as we mentioned that last week, you can only use the scissors to destroy something. So you got your sugar packet, you're cutting that sugar packet and throwing it out. That's fine. To cut anything to use it is actually prohibited. That's the difference between cutting a sugar packet and cutting toilet paper, cutting paper towel, or cutting saran, or cutting, you know, one is destructive and one is constructive. So we'll get to all the specifics. But that's a big difference. That's the big difference there. I remember, this is an embarrassing story, as an ACSYer, I must have been, I don't know, 14 or 15, and just coming, you know, just getting exposed to Hilchos Shabbos. So we run a Shabbaton, and the benchers, the NCSY benchers, you know, you and I all come to love, were brand new, and in their wrap, in the saran, clear saran wrap. And the rabbi there took out the package of benchers and started handing them out and ripping the plastic. So I, in my 15-year-old sagacious state, decided, how could he do such a thing? And I wasn't going to confront him, you know, but I wrote him a letter. I wrote him a letter saying, I didn't think it was appropriate, no, it was before email. He wisely never replied to my letter.
He did not.
He did not. No. Now, did he get it? I don't know, but... And then I went to a little, you know. So there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with destroying a wrapper to get to the contents. There's issues with destroying the wording. You know, that's a separate problem. Like the Splenda packet you can open as long as you don't rip the word Splenda. But being destructive in your tearing is okay. Being constructive is not. Okay. So that whole arena, ladies, again, getting back to preparation, is something that we have to be aware of, because it's something we do on a regular basis. We're always preparing for the future, and that's something that Torah says specifically not to do, because again, the message is the same as before. We don't want our minds veering off into anything but Shabbos. The goal is to enjoy Shabbos, to be present, to be here, to be in the now, and preparing for later, that's the opposite, the antithesis of what the spirit of Shabbos is all about. Taking a nap Shabbos afternoon. One should, there's nothing wrong and everything right, big mitzvah in my book, to take a nap Shabbos afternoon, as short as it sometimes is, especially in the winter. But one should not declare, you know, Shabbos, I think this past year was Shabbos and then Shuas. So the men were all staying up, some of the women were all staying up Saturday night to learn. One should not declare, you know, I'm going to take my 2 hour nap so I can stay up tonight to learn. That's really not appropriate, because then what you're doing is taking the Shabbos Menucha experience, which should be a Shabbos experience, and making it preparatory for the evening. It's the same act. It's like making your bed or doing the dishes. The same act. The permissible act done on Shabbos. But one should not declare that it's preparatory. I'm taking a nap because I enjoy napping on Shabbos. That's a Shabbos thing. It happens to be preparatory. It happens to be there's a fringe benefit. That's there's nothing wrong with that. But you shouldn't declare it to be not for Shabbos. That's not considered appropriate. Okay. Any questions about preparing? And again, some, you know, just like another example I have here is moving tables and chairs. You know, sometimes you just have to be, sometimes it's tricky to be really honest with yourself. Am I doing this because something that's going on later? Or am I doing this because I just don't want those chairs in my way right now? And what I normally do, the folding chairs, is fold them up. Meal's over, I put them away. If you leave them hanging, you know, they're all over the place on a Wednesday, then, you know, you just leave them and deal with them later. Get some extra pairs of hands to help you. Okay, so that's the preparatory. I should mention another example I have here somewhere. Another example that comes to mind is You're going for a walk, and you know you won't be back till dark, till after Shabbos is over, and by then it'll be chilly. There, the halacha says you certainly can take a sweater with you, because there we don't view it as something that is strictly and definitively and for sure. And this is a little bit of a gray example, but we don't view that as something which is definitively only for after Shabbos. You may get cold and wear it before Shabbos is over. It's not, you're not making a declaration. It's not, you know, something that's only and strictly for after Shabbos. We view that as a potential Shabbos need. There's no requirement to wear it. If you need it, you wear it. If you don't need it, then you'll wear it tonight. So there are, you know, there are some areas which are gray, a little grayer. But okay, that's the topic of preparing. Now, another point, ladies, and that is we avoid this whole idea of Shabbos and relaxation and resting. We also avoid causing undue discomfort or pain on Shabbos. There's an idea in halacha of avoiding sharing discomfort and pain. So one of the most obvious examples to that is not sharing bad news on Shabbos. Not sharing bad news. And there are plenty of stories of greats, of Torah giants, who would not share, God forbid someone passes away, they wouldn't share that information until after Shabbos, or a variety of these types of things. Certainly sharing tragedies, talking about what we just had, the country just suffered through, talking about that on Shabbos would not be appropriate. It may not be easy, it's something we want to get off our chest, it's something we want to, but that, let's face it, talking about it only makes, on one hand, it's a release and it's a certain therapeutic component to sharing. On the other hand, it makes us sad. I mean, it does focus us on the event. So one should do their best to save that type of conversation for after Shabbos. Shabbos is really not the best time to talk about those types of things. We don't fast on Shabbos, with the exception of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is really the only exception. Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos, which it does often. Then Yom Kippur overrides, so to speak, Shabbos in that sense. But every other fast day, Tisha B'Av is an example, can fall on Shabbos, is pushed off to Sunday. We don't fast on Shabbos. The goal of Shabbos is to enjoy, is to rest, is to eat, is to, a more heightened sense of pleasure should be felt on Shabbos than the rest of the week. Okay. Different topic, different area, and that is doing things on Erev Shabbos that affect Shabbos. So we did touch on this when we were talking about Muktzah and Bustis. Just to reiterate, there's nothing wrong with starting a Malacha process on Friday and having it continue into Shabbos. So there's nothing wrong, as we said, putting a challenge up before Shabbos, even though the cooking is being done, so to speak, on Shabbos. But you're not involved. You, the individual, is not doing the act. You're not involved with the act on Shabbos. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's a list of examples of that. Lights going on and off with timers, or sprinkler systems even, or any of those types of things are perfectly fine to run as long as you have nothing to do with them after you light candles. You're allowed to start a malacha process on Friday and can continue into Shabbos as long as you are not involved. The one exception I want to remind us all of, which is not, I don't think, as well known as it should be, and that is anything which is considered denigrating to Shabbos. So things that make noise, things like washing machines, as a good example, so appliances we discussed, those types of things should not be run, not because of malacha, not because you're engaged in it. You push the buttons and turn the dials before you lit candles. But the rabbis came along and said that doesn't add, that denigrates the spirit of Shabbos, and therefore one should not do that. Okay, this is a review from before. Another point about doing things on Friday, ladies, has to do, and this is more and more relevant today, has to do with time zones. Has to do with time zones. Which means, let's use LA and Atlanta as examples, being three hours apart. There is nothing wrong with a Jew in LA, who it's not Shabbos for, to call Atlanta and speak to, you know, call UPS, call Delta, call Georgia Pacific, you know, call a company here on the East Coast, even though it's Shabbos here. There's nothing wrong with that. The Jew in L.A., it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which means it's 7 o'clock here, and the fellow in L.A. is calling here. There's nothing wrong with that. He is not doing anything wrong. And the assumption is he's calling a company, he's speaking to a non-Jewish person. There's nothing wrong with that at all. That's a non-issue. Even though you're in, you know, the phone is ringing, so you're causing the phone to ring in a Shabbos zone, if you will. But that's not, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I will say, again, continuing the idea of Malach on Friday going into Shabbos, certainly calling a Jew from L.A., calling a Jew on the East Coast who does not yet keep Shabbos, does not know the beauty of keeping Shabbos, that certainly would be prohibited. Not because the L.A. Jew is doing anything wrong, but because he is aiding and abetting a Jew on the East Coast for doing something that he should not be doing. Despite the fact that the East Coast Jew doesn't know, doesn't care, doesn't whatever, you know, whatever the particular orientation of that the person is, perspective, that's irrelevant. We should never say, there's a much larger topic, but we should never say to ourselves, you know, I keep Shabbos, he doesn't, so I can do X, Y, or Z. Or I keep kosher, and she doesn't, and therefore, you know, this standard is okay. No, that's really not okay. These are our brothers and sisters. They have to keep the mitzvos just like we do. The question is how to encourage that, how to share, how to teach. That's a whole other schmooze. But we certainly should never allow ourselves to aid and abet someone else doing something which is prohibited. So again, number one of this is a Jew in one time zone can certainly call a non-Jew in a different time zone, text them, email them, whatever. That's perfectly fine. And the East Coast is much less relevant. I guess Israel would be an example. But the other way around, a Jew from LA calling Atlanta and speaking to another Jew certainly would not be okay. Yes, ma'am.
So along that line, if you wanted to invite someone to Shabbat,
yes.
But you know that the only way they can get there is in a bedding.
Right. Okay, so this is one of the
isn't that the premise of outreach?
Yes. And yes. This is one of the most famous and difficult questions that American Jewry struggles with. And that is inviting non-observant people to your home, knowing full well that they're going to drive. So I have discussed this with many different rabbis over the years, from different angles and different approaches and different... and the answer is not very clear at all. Certainly, we can say this for certainty, that if one can invite them and not, in somehow or other, work it out so that they're discouraged from driving. So, for example, let's say you someone, maybe it's a bad, doesn't fully answer your question, but just at the beginning, if someone's in shul, they come to shul anyway, so that driving, you have nothing to do with. And then you invite them to join you after shul, please come, you know, join us for lunch, and you walk to your home, and then what they do afterwards is whatever they do, that would be much less problematic than someone who doesn't come to shul at all, and you're inviting them knowing full well that they will drive. That's A. B is certainly inviting people to come Friday night and having them come, it's not easy with the timing necessarily, but having them come before Shabbos starts, again, mitigates it to a certain extent. And then there is the other piece of this, which is the, in other words, there's a couple issues here. One is, are you encouraging them to do something wrong? And the pushback to that is, they would be doing it anyway. We'd much rather be at your Shabbos table than be at the movies, than be at the mall. But that's true. There's truth to that. At the same time, there's issues of you aiding and abetting, and there's also issues, which I haven't mentioned yet, of Chil Hashem. Meaning, we don't want people thinking that, you know, that's Judaism for you, and I've got a whole other set of rules for me. We don't want to encourage that. That is what a lot of people think, let's face it. But we certainly don't want to be in the business of encouraging that attitude. And therefore, when I asked this question to one of the great poskim in America today, with David Cohen in Brooklyn, so he told me, as long as you offer the person a place to stay, you know, please come and spend Shabbos with us, knowing full well they're going to say no thank you, then you could say, okay, you know, we have a place for you, but please come join us for dinner, join us for lunch. He felt as long as you know, come for meals. Come for a whole Shabbos. And they said, no, just come for meals. And they said, no, come for one. that's you know, you went from the whole package deal to, you know, a la carte. He felt that was fine because you're at least declaring to them from the get-go that you have a place for them, they're welcome to come, you're not encouraging them to drive on Shabbos. So it's a very, you know, the textbook answer is no, you really can't, you can't aid in a bed. At the same time, we all know that many of us are here today because someone did that. Someone opened up their home on Shabbos. And who was I listening to? I think it was Michael Medved said once on the radio, on the tape, whatever, that he was invited to Lapin, I think is his Rebbe's name. And he, that's the, you know, he came for Friday night and he saw the candles, he saw the challah. That was the beginning of his journey back to back to Judaism. So that's true for a lot of us. So it's not a simple question at all. There's other aspects to it also. Yes, ma'am.
Continue.
Yeah. You guys are not letting me off the hook.
Okay, the people came. They said that.
Yeah, that's also very tricky. Well. Yeah, the issue you're hitting on is we don't want to benefit from Chil Shabbos. The person, you know, bought it on Shabbos or certainly brought it over in the car on Shabbos. So there is certainly a concept of not benefiting from Chil Shabbos.
Chil Shabbos?
Chil Shabbos. From activities that desecrated the Shabbos, any benefit from that we generally don't do. There are exceptions to that rule. But generally speaking, we do avoid that for a variety of reasons. So the best thing probably in that case would just to be to, you know, to say thank you and then not use it till later, which is not socially acceptable, but is the halachic, you know, better way to go. Meaning, certainly if they bring it over Friday afternoon, there's nothing, you know, obvious, for sure fine. They come back later, that's, you know, they're coming to you for lunch, but they drop something off Friday afternoon, knowing that's fine. But bringing something on Shabbos that came with them in the car is not, you know, it's not so not so simple. A lot of this is not Hilchos Shabbos, but is interpersonal. Do you say something, thank you very much, but do you not say anything and pretend you forgot, you know, to serve it? It gets very, very great. Right. Right. That's, yeah. Tomorrow night is the parenting class. The best thing there probably is to, you know, to tell your kids privately that right now we can't use this, and maybe explain to them later. It, you know, it is an amazing thing. People have made note of this, that you know, either non-observant Jews or non-Jews notice parents and kids shopping, and the mother says, "No, it's not kosher." That's the end of the conversation. It's an amazing thing I've seen with my own kids because, you know, I'm hungry, I want it. They know, research shows, if you ask seven times, kids ask seven times, they're going to get what they want. But if it's not kosher, it's over. The conversation is a non-starter, it's over, gamarnu, finished. Whereas, you know, for wishy-washy, they know it, and they see right through it, and they eventually win. So, same thing with Shabbos. It's a great teaching opportunity to the kids. You know, obviously a lecture on the spot is probably not appropriate, but certainly afterwards, to explain to them that you know, this is just not, we can't use it because, and though they understand it at 5 or they have to wait till they're 10 or 15 is a different story. You know, so these are tough interpersonal.
But you can use this stuff after Shabbat, right?
After Shabbos, yes. The halacha talks about if they, you wait long enough that the, that whatever act was done could have been done afterwards. So that you wait an hour, let's say, and they could have walked it over. You know, the time that, then we view it as you're not benefiting from the Chol Shabbos, you're just waiting. You know, it could have been done on Saturday night for the same, you know, for the same price type of thing.
But if it's a gift, right. I bring a bottle of wine.
Right.
So can we use it?
Well, certainly the bottle of wine is brought in a totally permissible way, is for sure, yes. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, that's getting into the issue of accepting gifts on Shabbos. We don't have to get into it right now, but certainly if the gift you receive is, there's no Chil Shabbos involved with getting it, and that gift is something you can use on Shabbos, which is usually the case, almost always the case, then you're allowed to accept that gift, yes. The only issue we're addressing here is if that bottle of wine was driven over. I just picked this up on my way to, I was stopped at Tower or whatever, and picked up this bottle for you. Here, that's a much bigger problem. Yes, ma'am. Good question.
But kosher. Kosher,
of course. gosh, I can't say I've ever seen that in writing, but I don't see a problem with that at all, because a non-Jew really should not keep Shabbos. It's something that's a day designated for the Jewish people, and so there's nothing wrong with anything from that. I should mention as an aside. This is a confusing point. This is a confusing point to a lot of folks, and that is that there's nothing wrong under the under certain circumstances to invite non-Jews over on Shabbos. There's nothing wrong with that for reasons I don't want to get into technicalities right now, but certainly it shouldn't change the nature of your Shabbos. You maybe should explain things more, etc., but the basic flavor of Shabbos should certainly stay intact. At the same time, there is a big problem inviting non-Jews over on Yom Tov that's not Shabbos, for, again, technical reasons I don't want to get into. There are ways around it, there are ways to solve that problem, to address it, but one should just know that rule, I think, is widely misunderstood. That rule only applies to Yom Tov meals, which seem to be, for some reason, when they're more relevant, and we wish they weren't, there wasn't a problem. Shabbos is no problem of having a non-Jew over at all. That's totally fine. Yes, ma'am.
I have a Shabbos question or something.
Right.
That's only if you're very desperate.
Yes, if one runs out, and let's say the situation is not, it happens, one should, there's a list of different, but the basics are one should try and tear it in a strange way, back your hand, something like that. This goes back to what we discussed before, which is, this particular halacha, this is one of the reasons people think we're absolutely, positively crazy. Like, what's the toilet paper? But one of the malachas, one of the 39 creative activities we're not allowed to do is tearing to size. Tearing something which is useful, actually. So, again, paper towel, all these types of things. So if one is stuck in that situation, because of something called kovod habrias, it's just basic human dignity, we allow it done in a strange way, which we haven't gotten to the technicalities of that yet. But just to answer your question, it should be torn in a strange way. Yeah, if you're really stuck.
What if someone burned completely the challah? Can I ask non-Jew to bring it from the supermarket?
Short answer is no. That gets into the whole topic of asking a non-Jew to do something for you specifically on Shabbos, and the answer is no. You generally cannot. I don't want to get into that whole topic right now.
It's like 5:45, and you say, you know what? I did this. Can you bring me some challah?
If they can,
to do anything that you can't do yourself.
Right. Generally, there are exceptions to that rule. I mean, books have been written about. Right. So, just to answer that briefly, and I'll take some other questions. And that is, if you can ask a non-Jew to, before Shabbos starts, ask a non-Jew to do something for you, and they could do it before Shabbos starts, and they choose to show up 10 minutes later, that would be permissible. But to ask them specifically, it's Friday night, and please go to the store and get me something for me on Shabbos. And the answer is no. So medicinal, obviously, is a separate story. But just owning Shabbos, there, you run out of challah, you're not, knock on your next door neighbors and borrow some matzah, whatever. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Bring it. 2 minutes.
Show me the difference. What is the difference between Shabbos?
Like an instant hot on your sink? Okay. So the right. Okay, so let's focus on, this is certainly something we'll discuss when we get to Bishul, but not to keep you waiting for a year. An urn is very different than an instant hot faucet or something like that, or just your regular hot water faucet. An urn is a closed system. An urn, you put the water in, it warms up to whatever it warms up to, I assume 212, and then drops down again to 190, 180, whatever it's set to go back down to, so you don't burn yourself when you drink it. And that's perfectly fine. So one of these urns, there was a big one out there over Shabbos, perfectly fine. You fill it before Shabbos, and it does its thing. Similar to a crock pot, yes. Now you, I don't get into all the technicals, but the best thing certainly would be, I mean, you cannot take water out of it until it's finished doing its thing, boiling and coming, until the light's on, but using an urn on Shabbos to make tea, coffee is perfectly fine. Using a faucet of any sort, instant hot, so it's 190, or your faucet, which is 120, 130, something like that, all that is prohibited, is not a closed system. It's a system which is designed to take in cold water. When you, by definition, when you take hot out, cold is allowed back in. And whether that, depending on the system, whether that directly turns on a burner or a coil or something or not, be that as it may, you're causing that cold water, which is now being introduced from the street, which is room temperature, 50, 60, 70 degrees, 80 degrees, whatever, to be warmed up to whatever the boiler is. You know, your typical hot water boiler in the basement, let's say it's at the 130. So it's, you know, you got this 40, 50 gallon tank, which is a pot, that's all it is, that you're allowing that cold water to be cooked. That's prohibited. That's prohibited on Shabbos. Then you get into Yom Tov, it gets even more confusing. You know, a lot of you use certain faucets, hot water faucets, and Yom Tov and not use other ones. Technology is making things much more exciting. No. Yeah, it depends on how it's designed. There's two kinds. Yeah, we won't go there. We will not go there. I suspect the more modern they become, the bigger problem they will become. But we'll leave that for later. But solar. I'd have to think about that. If it's strictly... strictly solar, I'd have to look into that. I don't remember what the halacha is in that case. Okay. Yes, that has been suggested. That has been suggested by many. It's a good trick, but it doesn't work because you can't shut off the inflow, because if you shut off the inflow, you create a vacuum and you can't get anything out. So by definition, that means the cold water is still coming in, and the hot water, which is still in there, which is at, let's say, 130, is now mixing with, even without a burner on, is now mixing with the cold water coming in at 70, and now the balance, you know, it'll end up being 125, you know, whatever it is. So that itself is a problem. Yeah. On Shabbos? The only way of using warm water on Shabbos is a closed system like an urn. We'll talk about the details, but you can certainly mix that with cold water on Shabbos and make lukewarm water. Or the discussion we had before, you can fill a bin Friday afternoon from hot water. You can certainly do that. Okay, it is 8:15.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.